Chapter 32. Thank you for your good counsel. I'll live for one thing, at any rate. I'll move father's body to a decent Christian churchyard, if I do it with my own hands. I can't save his life, but I can give him an honorable grave. He shan't lie in this accursed place. Apostrophe A, as our passant says, 'tis a barbarous custom they keep up at Sidlinch, and ought to be done away. Why? The man a old soldier too. You see, our passant is not like yours at Sidlinch. Apostrophe, he says it is barbarous, does he? So it is. Apostrophe, cried the soldier. Now hearken, my friends. Apostrophe, apostrophe, then he proceeded to inquire if they would increase his indebtedness to them by undertaking the removal, privately, of the body of the suicide to the churchyard, not of Sidlinch, a parish he now hated, but of Chalk Newton. He would give them all he possessed to do it. Lot asked Ezra Catstock what he thought of it. Catstock, the cello player, who was also the sexton, demurred, and advised the young soldier to sound the rector about it first. Midby he would object, and yet amid. The passant o' Sidlinch is a hard man, Ione, and they said, if folk will kill their souls in hot blood they must take the consequences. But ours don't think like that at all, and might allow it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what's his name? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the Honorable and Reverend Mr. Oldham, brother to Lord Wessex. But you need be afeard o'en on that account. He'll talk to ye like a common man, if so be you haven't had enough drink to gie ye bad breath. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, the same as formerly. I'll ask him. Thank you. And that duty done, apostrophe, what then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, there's war in Spain. I hear our next move is there. I'll try to show myself to be what my father wished me. I don't suppose I shall, but I'll try in my feeble way. That much I swear here over his body. So help me God. Apostrophe, Luke smacked his palm against the white hand post with such force that it shook. Yes, there's war in Spain, and another chance for me to be worthy of father. Apostrophe, apostrophe, so the matter ended that night. That the private acted in one thing as he had vowed to do soon became apparent, for during the Christmas week the rector came into the churchyard when Catstock was there, and asked him to find a spot that would be suitable for the purpose of such an interment, adding that he had slightly known the late sergeant, and was not aware of any law which forbade him to assent to the removal, the letter of the rule having been observed. But as he did not wish to seem moved by opposition to his neighbor at Sidlinch, he had stipulated that the act of charity should be carried out at night, and as privately as possible, and that the grave should be in an obscure part of the enclosure. You had better see the young man about it at once, apostrophe added the rector. But before Ezra had done anything, Luke came down to his house. His furlough had been cut short, owing to new developments of the war in the peninsula, and being obliged to go back to his regiment immediately, he was compelled to leave the exhumation and reinterment to his friends. Everything was paid for, and he implored them all to see it carried out forthwith. With this the soldier left. The next day Ezra, on thinking the matter over, again went across to the rectory, struck with sudden misgiving. He had remembered that the sergeant had been buried without a coffin, and he was not sure that a stake had not been driven through him. The business would be more troublesome than they had at first supposed. Yes, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, murmured the rector. I am afraid it is not feasible after all. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the next event was the arrival of a headstone by carrier from the nearest town, to be left at Mr. Ezra Catstock's, all expenses paid. The sexton and the carrier deposited the stone in the former's outhouse, and Ezra, left alone, put on his spectacles, and read the brief and simple inscription. Here lieth the body of Samuel Holway, late sergeant in His Majesty's D Regiment of Foot, who departed this life December the 20th, 180, erected by 50. H. I am not worthy to be called thy son. Ezra again called at the Riverside Rectory. The stone has come, sir. But I'm afeard we can't do it no-ho. I should like to oblige him, said the gentlemanly old incumbent. And I would forego all fees willingly. Still, if you and the others don't think you can carry it out, I am in doubt what to say. Well, sir, I've made inquiry of a Sidlinch woman as to his burial, and what I thought seems true. They buried N.Y.A. New 6-foot hurdle Saldro's body from the sheep pen up in North Euless, though they won't own to it now. And the question is the moving worthwhile, considering the awkwardness? Have you heard anything more of the young man? Ezra had only heard that he had embarked that week for Spain with the rest of the regiment. And if he's as desperate as it seemed, we shall never see him here in England again. It is an awkward case, said the rector. Ezra talked it over with the choir, one of whom suggested that the stone might be erected at the crossroads. This was regarded as impracticable. Another said that it might be set up in the churchyard without removing the body, but this was seen to be dishonest. So nothing was done. The headstone remained in Ezra's outhouse till, growing tired of seeing it there, he put it away among the bushes at the bottom of his garden. The subject was sometimes revived among them, but it always ended with, "Considering how I was buried, we can hardly make a job out." There was always the consciousness that Luke would never come back, an impression strengthened by the disasters which were rumored to have befallen the army in Spain. This tended to make their inertness permanent. The headstone grew green as it lay on its back under Ezra's bushes, then a tree by the river was blown down, and, falling across the stone, cracked it in three pieces. Ultimately the pieces became buried in the leaves and mold. Luke had not been born a Chalk Newton man, and he had no relations left in Sidlinch, so that no tidings of him reached either village throughout the war. But after Waterloo and the fall of Napoleon there arrived at Sidlinch one day an English sergeant major covered with stripes, and, as it turned out, rich in glory. Foreign service had so totally changed Luke Holway that it was not until he told his name that the inhabitants recognized him as the sergeant's only son. He had served with unswerving effectiveness through the peninsular campaigns under Wellington, had fought at Busaco, Fuensdonner, Ciudad Rodrigo, Badajoz, Salamanca, Vitoria, Quatre-Bras, and Waterloo, and had now returned to enjoy a more than earned pension and repose in his native district. He hardly stayed in Sidlinch longer than to take a meal on his arrival. The same evening he started on foot over the hill to Chalk Newton, passing the hand post, and saying as he glanced at the spot, "Thank God, he's not there." Nightfall was approaching when he reached the latter village, but he made straight for the churchyard. On his entering it there remained light enough to discern the headstones by, and these he narrowly scanned. But though he searched the front part by the road, and the back part by the river, what he sought he could not find the grave of Sergeant Holway, and a memorial bearing the inscription, "I am not worthy to be called thy son." He left the churchyard and made inquiries. The honorable and reverend old rector was dead, and so were many of the choir, but by degrees the sergeant major learned that his father still lay at the crossroads in Long Ash Lane. Luke pursued his way moodily homewards, to do which, in the natural course, he would be compelled to repass the spot, there being no other road between the two villages. But he could not now go by that place, vociferous with reproaches, in his father's tones. And he got over the hedge, and wandered deviously through the plowed fields to avoid the scene. Through many a fight and fatigue Luke had been sustained by the thought that he was restoring the family honor and making noble amends. Yet his father lay still in degradation. It was rather a sentiment than a fact that his father's body had been made to suffer for his own misdeeds. But to his supersensitiveness it seemed that his efforts to retrieve his character and to propitiate the shade of the insulted one had ended in failure. He endeavored, however, to shake off his lethargy and, not liking the associations of Sidlinch, hired a small cottage at Chalk Newton which had long been empty. Here he lived alone, becoming quite a hermit and allowing no woman to enter the house. The Christmas after taking up his abode herein, he was sitting in the chimney corner by himself, when he heard faint notes in the distance, and soon a melody burst forth immediately outside his own window. It came from the carol singers, as usual, and though many of the old hands, Ezra and Lot included, had gone to their rest, the same old carols were still played out of the same old books. There resounded through the sergeant major's window shutters the familiar lines that the deceased choir had rendered over his father's grave. He comes the price owners to release, and sought hands bondage held. When they had finished they went on to another house, leaving him to silence and loneliness as before. The candle wanted snuffing, but he did not snuff it, and he sat until it had burnt down into the socket, and made waves of shadow on the ceiling. The Christmas cheerfulness of next morning was broken at breakfast time by tragic intelligence which went down the village like wind. Sergeant Major Holway had been found shot through the head by his own hand at the crossroads in Long Ash Lane, where his father lay buried. On the table in the cottage he had left a piece of paper, on which he had written his wish, that he might be buried at the cross beside his father. But the paper was accidentally swept to the floor, and overlooked till after his funeral, which took place in the ordinary way in the churchyard. Christmas 1897. Enter a dragoon. I lately had a melancholy experience, said the gentleman who is answerable for the truth of this story. It was that of going over a doomed house with whose outside aspect I had long been familiar, a house, that is, which by reason of age and dilapidation was to be pulled down during the following week. Some of the thatch, brown and rotten as the gills of old mushrooms, had, indeed, been removed before I walked over the building. Seeing that it was only a very small house which is usually called a cottage residence situated in a remote hamlet, and that it was not more than 100 years old, if so much, I was led to think in my progress through the hollow rooms, with their cracked walls and sloping floors, what an exceptional number of abrupt family incidents had taken place there to reckon only those which had come to my own knowledge. And no doubt there were many more, of which I had never heard. It stood at the top of a garden stretching down to the lane or street that ran through a hermit group of dwellings in Millstock Parish. From a green gate at the lower entrance, over which the thorn hedge had been shaped to an arch by constant clippings, a gravel path ascended between the box edges of once trim raspberry, strawberry, and vegetable plots, towards the front door. This was in color an ancient and bleached green, that could be rubbed off with the finger, and it bore a small long-featured brass knocker covered with verdigris in its crevices. For some years before this eve of demolition the homestead had degenerated, and been divided into two tenements, to serve as cottages for farm laborers. But in its prime it had indisputable claim to be considered neat, pretty, and genteel. The variety of incidents above alluded to was mainly owing to the nature of the tenure, whereby the place had been occupied by families not quite of the kind customary in such spots, people whose circumstances, position, or antecedents were more or less of a critical happy-go-lucky cast. And of these residents the family whose term comprised the story I wish to relate was that of Mr. Jacob Paddock the market gardener, who dwelt there for some years with his wife and grown-up daughter. An evident commotion was agitating the premises, which jerked busy sounds across the front plot, resembling those of a disturbed hive. If a member of the household appeared at the door it was with a countenance of abstraction and concern. Evening began to bend over the scene, and the other inhabitants of the hamlet came out to draw water, their common well-being in the public road opposite the garden and house of the Paddocks. Having wound up their buckets full respectively, they lingered and spoke significantly together. From their words, any casual listener might have gathered information of what had occurred. The woodman who lived nearest the site of the story told most of the tale. Selena, the daughter of the paddocks opposite, had been surprised that afternoon by receiving a letter from her once-intended husband, then a corporal, but now a sergeant major of dragoons, whom he had hitherto supposed to be one of the slain in the Battle of the Alma 2 or 3 years before. She picked up Wyan against her father's wish, as we know, and before he got his stripes, apostrophe their informant continued. Not but that the man was as hardy a feller as you'd meet this side o' London. But Jacob, you see, wished her to do better, and one can understand it. However, she was determined to stick to him at that time, and for what happened she was not much to blame, so near as they were to matrimony when the war broke out and spoiled all. Apostrophe, apostrophe, even the very pig had been killed for the wedding, apostrophe said a woman, and the barrel o' beer ordered in. Oh, the man meant honorable enough. But to be off in 2 days, to fight in a foreign country, 'twas natural of her father to say they should wait till he got back. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and he never came, apostrophe murmured one in the shade. The war ended, but her man never turned up again. She was not sure he was killed, but was too proud, or too timid, to go and hunt for him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, one reason why her father forgave her when he found out how matters stood was, as he said plain at the time, that he liked the man, and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.